Still a couple of people just coming in, so I'll just wait for a few moments. Okay, very good. So we're coming close to the end of this retreat, maybe. We never know what happens next. One of these days we're going to get a call from the airport saying all flights have been cancelled. There is a terrorist attack on Perth International Airport, which means you just have to stay here and meditate some more. Would you like that? Really? Have you already got all your bags packed and ready to go and everything planned and what you're going to do next? You may have even planned what you're going to eat tonight. But sometimes that endings, I remember Ajahn Chah was saying he loved ending of things, you know, when things get finished. But unfortunately when we end things we usually start something else. And so life gets more and more complicated. And that complexity of life you're going to go back to now, unfortunately. When you're here on this retreat, one of the wonderful advantages of being on a retreat is life is so simple. You don't have to worry about your finances, about the stock market, about who's winning the sport. You don't have to worry about family, and you don't have to worry about anything. It's a worry-free retreat. And so here it's like an end of all those things which you really have to think about. But I often wonder why it is that even though you have the opportunity, you know, to end all of your business, still people want to make more business. It's as if we get addicted to doing things. We're afraid of just resting and letting things end. Sometimes life is like that. You know, you end one project and you start two more. And why do you do those projects? I'll just get this out of the way, get it finished, and then I can have a rest. And you find that that for many people is an endless task. It's a story I wrote in Open the Door of Your Heart. It's one of the other reasons why I became a monk. Because, you know, in UK, the biggest first exams you have to take is these O-level examinations. When you're about 14, 15, 16. And if you do well in those, then you go into the higher stream, you know, university preparation examinations. But if you don't, then basically you're stuffed. You have to get ordinary jobs like being a bricklayer or being a concrete worker. It's really weird, even though I got a good degree from University of Cambridge, I ended up as a bricklayer, as a concrete worker, sweeping the roads. So sometimes, you know, that all these things people say to you, and that's what they said to me when I was about 14, 15. They said, really work hard on your exams. Get that out of the way, and then you'll be happy. And, you know, this was actually became one of those mantras, those repeated sayings of my youth and early 20s. Get this out of the way and then you can be happy. So I did, I got O-levels out of the way and I worked hard and I did good results. So what happens next? More exams, A-levels. And the A-levels, when I was 14 or 15, this is true, I used to like playing soccer. So my parents and teachers said, stop chasing the ball. You know, chase good exam results and then you'll be happy. So I gave up playing football. And I stayed at home and just studied. But when it came to the A-levels, you weren't interested in soccer anymore. You were chasing not a ball, but a girl. So you're often chasing girls. Saying, no, no, stay at home. Don't go out. You know, do your homework. Study. Because if you pass the A-levels, Then you can go to university. And once you go to university, you'll be set for life. You'll be happy. So I sacrificed all going out with girls and stuff. Studied. And I did really well. I got to university. And when I got to university, what did they tell me there? Study hard. Because if you get your degree, then you're set for life. And, you know, I was at least smart enough. You know, the way I say this is quite accurate. I was smart enough to get what I call suspicious. Now, you should always be suspicious in life. Suspicious what the monk says, suspicious what the nuns do. Suspicious. Question, for goodness sake. And that's good, because if you're suspicious, if there's anything good, holy, true, you know, it will stand up to your suspicions. So I became suspicious, you know, that is this really what life is all about? You know, once you get a degree, then you're happy. Because I saw all my friends, their older friends, had already got their degree. Haha, were they happy? No way. They were in their first job. Remember the time you got your first job? Had to save money to get a car, maybe to get your own little apartment or share with someone. And you really worked really, really hard. You know, low money. You think, maybe when I get my promotion, then I'll have enough money to do this and do that. In the meantime, my friends, and they met girls, and they got engaged and got married. And that was big trouble. Because now they had to work double jobs to save enough money to get a mortgage. And so, yeah, they got married, they got maybe a little apartment or a mortgage, a simple house, and then they were working really hard to pay off the mortgage. And they could actually say, in those days, it was not that bad. Maybe 5-10 years, you could pay off your mortgage. You know, 5 or 10 years, paid off my mortgage, then we'd be okay. And in the meantime, they had kids. And that put paying off the mortgage back to 30, 40 years. And they think that when the kids grow up, when they go to school, then I can be happy, I can do more meditation. Or later on, when the kids, you know, they leave home and they get married, and then we'll be free, then we can do whatever we want. And it's always, you know, when this happens, then I'll be happy. But then I noticed that when the kids did leave home, and when you paid off all your debts for your house and stuff, then, you know, you're so close to retirement, usually. So a lot of people start thinking, when I retire, then I'll be happy. And when they do retire, they're too weak to be happy. They've got all these sicknesses, arthritis, diabetes, and stuff like that. So what happens next is that's why all the old people go to the churches and temples. You know why? Because they think, when I die, then I'll be happy. Can't you be suspicious right now? When the retreat's over, then I can be happy. When this meditation talk is over, then I'll be happy. When in the evening, when the question and answers are over, then I can lay back and then I can be happy. Isn't so much of your life wasted? When this is over, then I can be happy. That's why I don't look forward to the ending of things. When something ends, more problems start. So you should remember, even when you're at university, never to think, when this is over, then I'll be happy. Even when you're sort of getting old and sick, and when this sickness is gone, then I'll be happy. No, be happy now. This is the only time you have, right now. Never think, okay, when the situation changes, then I can relax and be happy. Relax and be happy now, because this is the only time you have. Which is one of the great reflections when it comes to a time like this. You know, a retreat is almost over. What do you mean, over? Nothing is ever over. One thing finishes and another thing starts, and it's never really over, is it? Even life is never over. As soon as you die, you get reborn again. Here we go again. Goodness me, can't we have enough of this? So this is one of the reasons why I never look for happiness in the future. Never think that, oh, when I get to Nirvana, then I'll be happy. Never think that when I go to heaven, if you're a Christian or a Muslim, then I'll be happy. You know, I don't know if I told that story, that joke. A Muslim told me that, he said, in the old days, that heaven used to be a happy place. Now it's really dangerous. Everybody is anxious up in heaven. Because there's so many suicide bombers that have been brought in heaven. There's bombs going off all over the place. You don't know, in heaven these days you step somewhere and something blows up, you don't know where is a safe place in heaven these days. But anyway, I think I did tell that joke, did I? Yeah, okay, where you go? I'm getting old, okay? So no, I already told you, nothing is ever over. It keeps repeating itself. The reason I keep telling the jokes is actually to emphasize, you know, reincarnation. You know, you think you've heard a joke many times before. How many times have you been born, for goodness sake? And here we go again. So that's why, you know, Buddhists are really into recycling. We even recycle our stream of consciousnesses into a new birth. But anyway, that's something else. Now, I'm making a point that don't get stuck or get lost in this idea that, you know, in the future you'll find some happiness. When this is over, then I can be happy. When this is completed, then I can be happy. Because otherwise you put off your future happiness, your happiness into the future, and it never ever arrives. This is the only time you have, so be happy. One of the stories which I gave in the retreat, in passing, but it's a powerful story for how you can meditate when you go home. If you go home, that is. Who knows what happens. It is true. There was a very famous Thai monk, and he was invited into the royal palace, this was maybe 50, 60 years ago, to do a blessing of like three princes or something. They were part of the royal family anyway. They were getting married. So they invited the monk to give a blessing and to give them a teaching. Now he was really a great monk. Because, you know, when he gave the teaching to these three princes who were getting married on the same occasion, the princes were so impressed that they forgot about being husbands and became monks instead. So all of the expectations of the wives were dashed. They said, oh, now I'm going to get married. No, they had the ceremony and then they went to the monastery and got ordained. So you never know what's going to happen next. Maybe I'll give such a brilliant talk this morning, you'll think, right, that's it, no, I'm not going home. I'm going to become a nun. You don't know. By the way, he was never invited into the palace ever again. Busting up three marriages and they'd only just started. But anyhow, the message is, please learn how to enjoy this moment. And that story, which I wanted to tell you, is the simple story, but please don't think that these simple stories are deep. Quite often people just misunderstand that if it's easy to understand, it can't be profound. And I've heard people give me criticism. They say, Ajahn Brahm, it's not profound. You can understand it too easily. It can't be deep. And other people, they go to some of these other monks who teach such gobbledygook, you can't understand it. And they ask afterwards, you know, did you understand it? No, but it must be deep. So please do not confuse, you know, gobbledygook, which you can't understand, as being profound. You know, if it really is deep, you should be able to understand it. And this is such a simple story, but, you know, if anything else, if you lose everything else, forget everything else, remember this, and then you'll be a very happy meditator, happy life. The two go together. What works in meditation would work in your life if you understand it properly. And that's the old Emperor's Three Questions. Now is the most important time. You know, the Emperor's Three Questions, he wanted to find a religion for himself. This is an old story, but it's so contemporary. How many people are fed up with religions in our modern world? You know, even in Buddhism, you know, there's monks over in Burma torching Muslim places, even in Sri Lanka, you know, trying to sort of make sure that Sri Lanka is a Buddhist country forever and ever, and abusing the human rights of others. That's happening. So, no, not Buddhism as well. All these religions. I think, who was it? One of the founders of Apple Macintosh, Alan or something, he was saying, bad people can do bad things, but only religion makes good people do bad things. And that's a very good comment. No, because of religion, good people can do very bad things. So sometimes people are really fed up with religion. And so They decide to try and make their own religion, a concoction of this and that or whatever, which is fair enough. But this is what this king wanted to do. He's fed up with all of these so-called experts in religion fighting each other and who's got the best religion and yours is much worse than ours. My religion is for the superior-minded, your religion is for the dummies. All that sort of stuff, you know, that people get fed up with it, and quite rightly so. So, he decided to find his own religion. He realized only three questions. The answer to three questions is all you need to know. Really, all those questions, you know, on the evening, you only needed three questions to ask. When is the most important time? Who is the most important person? What's the most important thing to do? And you all know that story, so I won't go in too much detail. Now is the most important time. And the person or the thing in front of you is the most important. Now, of course, that was the key to the emperor's three questions in the story by Tolstoy. And I'm not sure if I emphasized it enough in the meditation. I did with a couple of people who were doing interviews. Said, I've got sloth and talk. I'm dull. The breath disappears and there's nothing happening. I said, but what's in front of you when the breath disappears? What is that experience like? Whatever's right in front of you now is the most important thing. Not the nimitta, not the jhanas, they're not in front of you. What's right in front of you, the experience of right now, is the most important thing. So even if you're dull, respect the dullness, that's important. And the most important thing to do is to care. The when, the who, the what. Now, thing in front of you, most important thing to do is to care. And if you follow that simple instructions in meditation, you will get into jhanas, the whole works really quickly. Why? Because present moment, you're paying attention to what's happening right now, you've got mindfulness. If you're trying to get rid of something, you're not mindful. You're half mindful of where you want to be in the future. You're not mindful now. You're mindful of what you're going to do when you get home this afternoon. You know, you're split. So if you stay in this present moment right now, the most important thing. And the great thing, what you're supposed to do. How many times people in interviews, this happens, what am I supposed to do? Meditation just disappears, what am I supposed to do? I see lights coming into the mind, what am I supposed to do? I see a monster coming into my mind, what am I supposed to do? Care for the monster. Nice monster. So nice, just like that monk who patted the king cobra. Nice king cobra, thank you for coming to visit me. Please don't do that here. Otherwise we'll have to take you to the hospital, we get sued. But, you get the idea, now's the most important time, the thing in front of you is the most important, and the most important thing to do is to care. So do that right now. Now is the most important time. Forget about, afterwards when you have to clean your huts. That comes later. Forget about, how you're going to get to the airport in time or not in time. That comes later. Just be here and enjoy every moment of this retreat. And how do you enjoy it? Caring for it. Even when you do clean your huts, if that is what's in front of you, this is the most important time. Most important thing to do is to care for what I'm doing right now. So you clean your huts so beautifully. It reminds me of that favourite story, another favourite story of Ajahn Chah. Sometimes these simple stories, they're just all you need for the rest of your life. This guy from Australia, he went to see Ajahn Chah when Ajahn Chah was getting famous. He wanted to ask some questions on meditation, just like some of you want to ask those questions. He travelled to this famous monk, but unfortunately he was too famous. He was surrounded by so many other lay people. This poor Australian guy couldn't even get close. He waited there for 2 or 3 hours, realised there's no way that he's going to get to the front of the queue. So he decided to go back to his taxi and go back to Australia. He just went to China for that one thing, to see Ajahn Chah. It's so disappointing. All that way, all that effort, all that money for nothing. But on the way to his taxi, he realized he still had another half an hour or an hour to kill. He saw the monks were sweeping, so he picked up a broom and started sweeping. Never, ever miss an opportunity to make good karma. because what happened next changed his life. He was busy sweeping and he felt a hand on his shoulder. It belonged to Ajahn Chah. Some of these monks are great. Now Ajahn Chah knew this guy had come, but hadn't managed to get an opportunity to speak to him. Saw him walk away, so got up and actually went to see him. Didn't have much time to give a big interview. Not like the 10-minute interviews I give. It had to be 1 minute, 30 seconds. But what Ajahn Chah said was worth all the journey. He said, if you're going to sweep, give it everything you've got. And then Ajahn Chah went away. Now, he didn't mean to try just to make the monastery perfect. He said, whatever you're doing, it, give it full effort. And this man, he came to see me here in Bodhinyana several years ago. And he said he wouldn't believe just how effective that teaching was. That was his teaching for his life. When he meditated, he gave this moment everything he had. If he was dull, he gave dullness everything he had. If he was watching the breath, he gave breath everything he had. Put full attention on whatever was happening. And when he was working, on some project, he would give that 100% attention. He wouldn't think of going home to his family afterwards. He'd be on the job. And when he was with his family, he wouldn't think of the work. When he went to sleep at night, he wouldn't think of what he had to do in the following morning. He was totally focused in the moment. Whatever he did, gave everything he got. And he said that was one of the best pieces of spiritual advice he ever had. And hopefully that's what you've got here. Whatever you're doing, walking meditation, give everything you've got with a bit of fun. There's still some time to do kangaroo walking meditation if you haven't done it yet. And therefore you are successful, happy, peaceful. The whole works comes. And I always like telling that story towards the end of something like a retreat. Because, I was asked last night about, to give in donations, where we should go. And there's a message, I think, from Bianca, which fund needs the most money? And it doesn't really matter which fund, but always remember Ajahn Chah's story. If you, whatever you're doing, you must always give it everything you've got. So if you're giving a donation, give it everything you've got. That never works. But what it does mean is just, when you really sort of give to the task at hand, give to one another, give to cleaning your rooms, give to anything. Now you'll find that you get so much happiness back, and so much success, so much energy. But on the subject of cleaning the rooms, I know Bianca loves me telling this story at this time, the last talk of the retreat. On the subject of cleaning your rooms, some of you, come from very wealthy families, and you have maids to do all the cleaning. Some people come here, they've never ever cleaned a toilet bowl in their lives before. And they think, oh my goodness, I have to clean a toilet bowl. Bianca, can I pay someone to do it for me? Because we get people from all types of strata of society in this place. So, how can you do that? And to solve the problem, I like telling these people the story of the five fingers. And if you haven't heard this story before, it's a good one. If you have, it's a golden oldie, reincarnated yet again. people like listening to music they've heard. Apparently they still play 60s music on the radios, and they've heard it so many times before. The Beatles, some of them are dead, and they still, even apparently the Rolling Stones still keep concerts. They're coming here soon, aren't they, to Perth? How on earth can they perform? Do they perform on Zimmers? Anyway, five fingers were arguing which one is the most important of the five fingers. And we started with the thumb. We said, I am the most important finger. I am the strongest. I am the opposable thumb. Without me, you can't grasp anything. And also, when you say, okay, which finger do you put up? Me. I am the okay finger. I am the best. And then this finger put its finger up and said, no, I am the most important finger. I'm called the index finger. I point things out to people. I am the finger of wisdom. And wisdom is much more important than strength. And when you say number one, which finger do you put up? One, me. That proves I am the most important finger. And then this finger put itself up and said, no, I am the most important finger. If you want to see how powerful I am, put it up the other way. I am the tallest and can see further. And I am also the middle finger. And in Buddhism, we practice the middle way. I am the most important of all of you guys. And then left his fourth finger. And he said, no, you're all wrong. I am the most important finger. Because I am the finger of love. When you get engaged, I get the ring. When you get married, I get the ring. I am the symbol of love, compassion. And isn't love and compassion the most important thing in the world? Yeah, some people say they're wise. Some people say that, they're powerful. But what's more powerful than compassion? What is more of an expression of wisdom than love? I am the most important finger. And that left this little fellow. With respect, gentlemen, I am the most important finger. Why? Even though you use me to do dirty things. Still, when you pray to the Buddha, I am always closest to the Buddha. So, the one in this retreat group who cleans up, who does the dirtiest of things, you are closest to the Buddha. Not the wise ones, not the ones who get jhanas, not the ones who are strong, but the ones who clean up. You are closest to the Buddha, just like the little finger. So, Bianca likes me telling that story because it gets things a lot cleaner when you're closest to the Buddha. So, but also in this retreat, you can see that you can tell that to your kids as well. Now, if they're Buddhist, or even if they're Christians, praying to Jesus or something, you're closer to the Buddha, Jesus, when you clean your room up. Have you noticed if you tell a story and tell someone what to do, then they never do it? If they make it fun and enjoyable, then people only learn and they're motivated to do things. So during this whole retreat, I've made it fun, I hope. Give it a bit of life, a bit of energy, a bit of humour. Because you will find that with that humour, with that fun, you want to meditate more. And you get more understanding of the teachings when they're couched in humour. You actually remember things. That's why, what is the tradition we teach here? Is it Hinayana, Theravada, Mahayana, Vajrayana? What is it? Hahayana, yes. So please always remember the Hahayana Buddhism, which is the best. And was there Hahayana at the time of the Buddha? I reckon there was. Because there's a lot of humour in some of those old stories. And I'll tell you one of the most humorous stories which you will find in the Buddhist Tripitaka. And this is in the Nuns Patimokkha. Because monks and nuns, we have all our rules. And the nuns have 311 rules we have to keep. And when I was reading through that the first time, I was kidding myself laughing at one of the stories for one of the rules in the Nuns Patimokkha. And if you think that Buddhism has no humour, listen to this. And it also addresses the problem of why on earth people are so gullible. They were those days, they are these days. But here's the story. In those days, 2500 years ago, the nuns' monasteries were actually just on the edge of town, for security. And like any other monastery, there's a whole group of people in there. And one of the things even nuns have to do is go to the toilet. But in those days, there was no such things as plumbing and septic tanks. All the stuff from the toilet went into a big group of buckets. And it was somebody's job to empty the buckets in the morning so they are, you know, available for the next day. And there was supposed to be a place, you know, like an area you can empty the buckets, like the septic pit. But it was a little bit of a long way away from the toilets. So early one morning, a bhikkhuni, a nun, it was her job to clean the toilets. And if you think cleaning your toilets is difficult, this is much more difficult. Oh, buckets of you know what. And instead of taking it to the proper place, it was early in the morning, no one was around, so she threw it over the monastery wall. And you know Murphy's Law? Murphy's Law is almost should be one of the teachings of the Buddha, because it happened in the time of the Buddha, it happens now. Murphy's Law, if it can happen, it will happen. A man was on the other side of the wall. Now, not only was there a man on the other side of the wall, he was going to the palace. So he had his very best duds on, very best clothes, nice hairdo and whatever else. His very best clothes. He was going to go see the king, you know, to try and get some contract. And there he was, you know, walking along, just, you know, minding his own business, and a bucket of shit fell on his head. Now, if that was you, imagine what you would think. Imagine your reaction. You would not be very happy. You would not be content. Making peace, being kind, being gentle would be the last thing going through your mind. He was enraged. He knew where it came from. The nuns' monastery. So he was so upset. He said, "These aren't real nuns. Look what they've done to me." And in those days, instead of street lights, they had little torches, flaming torches, you know, with some, usually some sap which would burn all night. He grabbed one of those and said, "I'm going to burn down this monastery. Look what they've done to me. They can't do this to me. I'm going to destroy them all." And as he went into the nuns' monastery, he saw the gatekeeper coming out. And the gatekeeper looked at him, all dripping with shit. "So what happened to you? Look what they've done to me. These nuns in there are going to the palace, best clothes on. Look what they've done. They can't do this to me. I'm going to burn their monastery down." And the gate said, "Hold on a minute. That's holy." "That comes from enlightened nuns. That's a blessing. That's like holy water up to the next level." And if you don't think that people are gullible, I've seen people, they've been as gullible, not quite to that level, but I remember once, I saw this, I was actually scared when this happened. A general, I think a major general in the Thai army, came to see Ajahn Chah. And this was a time, now basically the government was run by the generals. And he came for a blessing. He said, "Ajahn Chah, can I have some holy water?" He didn't have any holy water, so "Come here, bend your head over." He spat in the general's hair and then rubbed it in. Quite like, I thought, "Oh my God, you've gone too far." I was scared. Now, this stupid general, he loved every moment of it. He goes, "No, I'm so blessed. I've got the holiest water straight from Ajahn Chah's mouth." And if you think that's nothing, remember, these guys, they chewed betel. It was all red and yucky. So it's amazing how gullible people are. But anyway, the general believed it, and so did this guy. And so the gatekeeper said, quick, go home, get dressed, change, go back to the palace. Something's really going to be good to happen to you today. This is really lucky. This is special. Oh, really? Great." So this guy, he forgot about burning down the monastery. No, he knew he'd been blessed. And he went back home, changed, you know, showered, went back to the palace. And he got given a very, very lucrative contract by the king. And so, you know, being in business, he went around to his friends saying, "Hey guys, if you want to do good in business, go to the nun's monastery and ask some real holy water. Not that ordinary wet stuff, the real stuff." And when that got round to the Lord Buddha, you know, he said, you know, he told those nuns, "Come over here." And he said, "You are lucky, really lucky, that, you know, you've got a gatekeeper who can talk and can say, well, what, sell ice to an Eskimo. You know, he really knows how to sort of, should be a politician, not a gatekeeper, if he can sell that bad story." But as a result of that, he said, "Don't do that ever again." And to this day, it is an offence of Pajitya. You read it, it's one of the 311 rules. It's an offence deserving confession for a bhikkhuni to throw a bucket of shit over the wall. It is there. You can go and see it afterwards. So you say that Theravada doesn't have a sense of humour, it does. And it's really good sense of humour as well. Down to earth, of course, but it made you laugh. So, whatever you do in life, please see the funny side of it. Please don't get upset and angry. One of the best ways of overcoming anger and fear is to have fun, to laugh. You just can't get angry and have and share a good joke at the same time. The same with fear. If you have love, fun, happiness, all fear in life just goes. See the funny side of life, for goodness sake. Be a Hahayana. And if you practice Hahayana, if you really get to the end of Hahayana, you become what we call a Harahant. Fully enlightened. Now, this is not indulging, this is actually seeing with wisdom. Because have you ever noticed that many, many wise people are always very light-hearted, always very easy to sort of laugh? And I know in Thailand, you know, that most of the lay people, you know, said, "Oh, you monks are just so serious, it must be so hard being a monk." Now, that was in public. You know, when it was in public, I was told I'm not supposed to smile. You know, but then when all you guys went home, that's when the monks, they really started to let loose. And, you know, being a monk myself, it was like being in a boys' club. It was like being just in school. It was like just people were messing around, they were playing. All those monks, you know, it's like they hadn't grown up. Isn't it a wonderful thing to keep with playing? Somebody sent me some, every now and again they sent me these interesting little stories and photographs. They sent me a photograph of bus stops in Montreal. And you know the bus stops you have? Maybe it's in Australia or Sri Lanka or Taiwan. Little benches with covers over them. Surely we can do better than that. So in Montreal, the bus stops are swings. So you've got a little seat, two ropes above. So when you're waiting for the bus, you're swinging backwards and forwards. Old men, young people. And they say it's so popular. Sometimes they're enjoying the swing, their bus comes, "I'll catch the next one." And whoever thought of that, genius. You know, put a bit of fun into one of the most boring things, waiting for a bus. And you can see how that happiness creates good health, great emotional states of mind, peace, and even deep meditations. Never underestimate the power of having fun. And what that means is when you do go home, if you do go home, you go home, and number one, you want to come back again. You know, sometimes people in Malaysia, I go to Malaysia a lot, they are terrified of going on a retreat. Because they go on this retreat where you have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and if you don't, and this actually happens with some retreats, they send people to your door, knock on the door, and they drag you into the meditation. That's like a boot camp. That's like Guantanamo Bay. That's like what they do in North Korea in the re-education camps. But that's actually Buddhism for some people. And of course, they go on those once and they never want to go back again, unless they're masochists. So this is one of the troubles here. It's very hard to get in because this is a lot of fun. It's happy. You love coming here. And it's also, you get so much out of it. Peace, wisdom, happiness. And this is what religion is supposed to be giving you. If you want suffering, there's enough suffering out there in the world, going to work, you know, managing a family and all the sort of difficulties in life. You don't want to come to a retreat centre and get more suffering. You want to have a bit of relaxation, a bit of freedom from suffering, a bit of peace, a bit of time when you can just reflect and see where you are and where your position is in life and what to do. Just giving time for yourself is just what's such a wonderful gift. And of course, here you do have that time. You don't have to come to the meditations. Even the talk you don't really have to come to. And sometimes I really enjoy when I walk past and see someone just having a cup of tea, just, you know, looking at the scenery, just sitting down in the evening, just watching the stars, giving time to themselves. What a wonderful gift that is. So this is not just meditation for enlightenment. This is meditation for a happy, peaceful, balanced life. Giving yourself that time. And if you can't get on the next retreat here, which is getting more and more difficult, you can find time in so many different places of our world. Again, your house, your garden. If you want to have a bit of peace in your own house, you should try this little exercise. I don't know if I said this the first night, being the visitor instead of the owner. Because if those of you have gone over to Bodhinyana Monastery, it's such a peaceful, beautiful monastery, Bodhinyana, for you guys. For me, that is my office. That is my work camp. That is my building site. And so it was for many years. You guys would come over and say, oh, what a beautiful monastery, how peaceful it was. And I'd say, are you kidding? Can't you see all the work which needs to be done? You know, I just walk somewhere and someone stops me and asks me a question. It's not peaceful. You know, I go sit down with a cup of tea and someone comes up to me. Can I ask you questions on meditation? Can you sign my book? Can I take a photograph of Ajahn Brahm? They don't leave me alone. What do you mean it's a peaceful place? Ah! So I realized it was my fault. No one else's. So I thought, how come you guys can see something in the monastery where I live which I can't see? How come you find it so peaceful and beautiful, where to me there's so much work to be done? So I decided one day to pretend. I pretended to be a visitor and not the abbot. So I say, okay, for 2 hours I'm going to just be like you. So I'm pretending to visit my monastery for the very first time in my life. And when I pretended like that, I could see it was beautiful, it was nice. And someone would come up to me and say, you know, can I ask you a question on meditation? I said, no, 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 I'm only a visitor, I'm not the abbot here, I'm not the teacher. You have to go and ask someone else. Someone actually said, you know, just the water's falling down. Oh, sorry, I'm only a visitor. Can you clean up? No, I'm only visiting today, so sorry, go and see somebody else who lives here. So when I was a visitor, I was totally irresponsible. I could find some peace, my own time, and just enjoy the place. And that's why when you go home, please do the same thing. Pretend to be a visitor in the house in which you live. So, dishes need to be washed. How many of you wash dishes when you go and visit your friend? If you do, you're weird. Or you can come and visit us. No, that's the host job. You don't cook when you go to somebody else's house. You don't mow their lawn. You don't go to somebody's house and get out the vacuum cleaner and vacuum their carpet for them. If you do, you're weird. No, it's their job to do all the cleaning up. You just go there and they get served coffee. They bring out biscuits for you. You can use their toilets. You don't have to clean them afterwards. And then after 2 or 3 hours, oh, thank you, friend. Very nice. See you next week. You can enjoy the place when you're a visitor. But when you're an owner, you have too many responsibilities. So for some time in your life, every week, be a visitor to life. Don't be an owner. Be a visitor to your meditation, not an owner. A visitor to your body, not an owner. Then you have absolutely no responsibility. You can relax and be at peace. You can see this world like other visitors see this world. Beautiful and peaceful. But when you own it, there's too much things to do. So, simple wisdom for when you go back. When you're a meditator, remember, it's not your meditation. You go back to, oh, just this meditation retreat was not so good, not as good as the last one. My meditation is not as good as it used to be, or my meditation is really getting better now. My meditation is really taking off. Stop it. It's not your meditation. You're just visiting the mind. It doesn't belong to you. Then it really gets good. When you're a visitor, you can have some peace. When you're an owner, there's always more things to do. Doesn't matter how much your meditation has developed in this retreat. Doesn't matter what you've achieved. You've all got something more to do, haven't you? If you're an owner, there's always more to do. But when you're a visitor, there's nothing to do at all. That is the secret of peace and happiness. Not owning, being a visitor. When your grandparents, when you get your grandkids come, you can really have fun with them. You can enjoy their company, they enjoy your company. Why? Because you've got no responsibility. You don't own them. That's, you know, your children's children. So, you know, your daughter, you know, it's her job to look after the kids. You can just enjoy them. Isn't it wonderful to see grandkids? But if it's your own kids, you've got to make sure they're doing their homework, make sure they wash behind their ears, make sure they do all this sort of stuff. And it's just a pain, isn't it? Grandparents, you can just enjoy because you don't own your children. Can you get the message here? When we own things, we can't enjoy them. Do you own your partner? That's my wife. That's my husband. Control, control, control. No, you're just visiting. It's only a temporary relationship. You know, for 40 years, 60 years, who knows? But eventually it's going to die. So when you don't own, you can enjoy. So that's this little message. I better shut up now because I can go on for hours. So I hope you've enjoyed the retreat. If you haven't, never mind. None of my business. I am not the teacher. I'm only visiting. So we're going to do a loving kindness meditation to formally end it, but I'm finished a little bit earlier in about 8 minutes' time. So those of you who want to have a toilet break before we do the loving kindness, what's the point of doing loving kindness? You know, if I'm not kind to your plumbing. So those of you who want to do some letting go, to let go of a few things, please. And you know how the ladies' toilet, the first one who gets there gets in quickly. There's only a few of them there, so on your mask, get set, go, 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 quick, 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 quick. Otherwise, you're going to have to queue up. And you know, a lot of people say, no, no, I don't need to go. And then 2 minutes later, you think, yes, I do need to go. So just make a decision, just as Nike says, don't just restrain, just do it. And for those of you left here, if anyone wants to have anything, photographs or anything, now's a good time because there's a big queue afterwards. No photographs? Good. Actually, you don't need photographs. Oh, you do need photographs. Photographs is just collecting the past. Okay. I don't know why they keep doing photographs. Yeah, oh, you've lost it. That photograph is gone now. Oh, yes. Aha. Just relax. You got it? There's no limiter. No flash. Okay. Okay. I'm not contagious. Very good. Next, please. Go on. You know, when I became a monk, I never thought I'd end up like this. No. It takes a lot of training to keep smiling for 5 or 10 minutes. You got it? You need to give these things to young people. Okay, very good. I don't know if you know that one of the Australian supermodels, Miranda Kerr, she's a Buddhist. So you know, we swap notes on posing for photographs. No, we don't. Very good. No, you're not. You're not sorry. That's very polite. Very good. That's my purpose in life, to be photographed. No trouble. Very good. Very good.
Good fundraising.
Yeah, no, it's a good fundraising. They can Photoshop him in. Very good. Okay. So I think most people have let go now. So you are free to be happy inside. So, for the loving kindness meditation, we start with just relaxing the body and relaxing the mind. And after about 5 minutes, I will start chipping in with the loving kindness meditation Ajahn Brahm style.
Oops.
So to start the loving kindness meditation, once you're settled down, I encourage people to visualize or imagine an object which you find it very easy to have loving kindness towards. I usually use a little kitten which I imagine I found abandoned, lonely and hungry. If you prefer dogs, you can imagine a little puppy or a bigger dog, a baby, or if you find it difficult, just imagine teddy bear. Something which is so easy to develop loving kindness towards. Because in the development of loving kindness, it is like lighting a fire. You start with paper, which easily takes the flame. And afterwards you put on twigs, bigger pieces of wood. And only at the end you put on the logs. We have to start lighting a fire with something simple. We have to start loving kindness with something simple. Imagine an object. So when I say little kitten, you can imagine it could be a rabbit, dog, baby, teddy bear, whatever. Something very easy to develop feelings of warmth, kindness, protection towards. And I imagine finding this little kitten hiding in a dark corner, lonely and terrified. The only thing it's ever known since being abandoned by its mother is pain, rejection, fear. I imagine looking into that corner and seeing these two eyes which are quivering with fear. Looking into those eyes and giving it reassurance, kindness, love. Dear little being, please don't be afraid. There are people who will care for you, who won't harm you, who will look after you and feed you and nurture you. And I'm one of those beings. Little kitten, please let me help you. And I imagine myself very slowly, carefully, extending my hand towards that little being, seeing it draw back, but not too far, seeing some hope in its little eyes. Maybe this person won't hurt me. Until I can reach in and touch that little kitten's fur and feel it dirty. To feel the bones sticking through the skin. It hasn't eaten for such a long time. Feeling its tightness start to relax as it realizes I'm not going to harm this little being. Picking it up so gently and bringing it slowly to my chest. Dear little kitten, I will care for you. I'll make sure you are well fed, protected. I will nurture you in these early days until you can be strong, fit. It's no sacrifice for me, it's my joy to help you. As I bring this little kitten and see these scabs of blood on its fur, so dirty, so uncared for, so thin, but at least it's starting to relax. As I hold it to my chest and feel its energy on my heart, my heart's energy going into this little abandoned kitten, holding it, stroking it so lightly until that little kitten relaxes and starts to purr for the first time in her life. Dear little kitten, you have a friend, a protector, someone who will find you some milk, even if it's out of my own cornflakes bowl. Will always find you some fish and whatever you need to eat. It'll be my joy to see you grow, to go strong, confident and free. We all need a protector, especially in the early days of our life. Little kitten, you lost yours, but now you've gained me. I will care for you, look after you, play with you. Dear little kitten, you have a friend. And as I think these thoughts, still imagining I'm looking into this kitten's eyes, I imagine its eyes get bigger, softer, as whatever love and care I give this kitten, it tries to give me back. Dear little kitten, the door of my heart is open to you. You have a friend, a protector, you're always welcome. Yeah, you can go off and do your cat things, sometimes days at a time, but you come back. You have a nice soft place to rest your head, a warm little corner of my heart in which to sleep, and food, special food which I'll get for you. Dear little kitten, I care for you. I really want you to be happy, and your happiness is my joy. It's my delight to see you running up and down. Dear little kitten, I love you. I care for you. When you say these words and imagine this little abandoned being who needs your love just to survive, like we all do, you can imagine that area above your heart in your chest starts to tingle. There's a physical feeling there, the counterpart of loving kindness. And you feel that tingle in your chest. Loving kindness, metta, is starting to arouse. And then when the primary object, the paper with which you light the fire of love, when that paper has taken the flame, you can switch the image from your little kitten to a real person in this world. A person who you're very, very close to. It could be your partner, your lover, your parent, your child, your best friend. Whoever it is who is so close to you. Imagine them as if they're right in front of you. And realize that they are no different than the little kitten. Life can be so hurtful and painful. They too need the arms around them, bringing them in, warming them, reassuring them, to take away their pain and fear. And so you look upon the person who's closest to you in this world and say, dear friend, lover, companion, I care for you. I truly wish to take away your pain, your fear, your stress. My happiness is seeing you free and peaceful. My happiness is seeing you free of all pain and sickness, physical as well as emotional. I truly, honestly want you to be happy. When I see you smile, that gives me so much satisfaction. When I see you laughing and happy, your eyes twinkling, that gives me so much joy. A dear friend, companion, your happiness is my concern. I care for you. As when you feel these thoughts of kindness, compassion, caring to the person who's closest to you in this life. Again, feel that sensation in your chest. Tingling, that's what I call it, whatever you call it, of loving kindness, generating, getting stronger and stronger. And you can imagine that that tingling is coming from this golden light ball of energy around your heart region, shining through your chest to that person, your best friend, closest associate, sending this beautiful energy of loving kindness, care, protection, well-wishing to this person who you love very much, sending it to them, bathing them. You can imagine their body being bathed in this golden light coming from your heart, your metta, your loving kindness, all around their head, inside, in their body, down their arms, down to their toes, until they're iridescent, they're fluorescent with this beautiful loving kindness you're giving them, healing them, both physically and emotionally, reassuring them that they're not alone in this world. There's people who care for you, who think about you, who want your happiness as their major concern. And that's you giving this light, this power of love. My dear friend, honestly, truly, sincerely, may you be happy. May your smile just go deep inside of you, from your mouth into your heart to the deepest parts of you. May you be at peace, free of all fear, anything you've done in the past. For my love, may you forgive it and let it go. May the power of this compassion just melt any hard places in your heart. My dear friend, I care for you. I want you to be happy, to be free, to be at peace. It's my wish for you. And this golden energy coming from my heart is taking that message and soaking your body and your mind with it, as you give this powerful loving kindness to your best friend. And the more you give, the more that tingling starts to awaken, the more that light in your heart gets stronger like an emitter, bright and golden, starting on easy objects. Now something still easy but a little bit tighter, tougher. Without opening your eyes, imagine all the people sitting in this room, your fellow travelers on this meditation retreat for the past 9 days. The people just like you who have been frustrated, disappointed, but sometimes have some breakthroughs in meditation. The people who have been banging the doors and talking, and just like you. In this moment, care for everybody. Give them all forgiveness. Every one of you has been trying as best you possibly can, within all the limitations of our karma and our past. My dear friends, companions on this path, I really forgive anything which you've done, and I too ask forgiveness from you. Me, Ajahn Brahm, ask forgiveness for all my bad jokes, all the silly stuff which I do. You give forgiveness to others. Why? Because you care. Your happiness, as you say this to everyone in this room, is important to me. I really want you to be at peace, to find joy, bliss in your meditation, success in your life, freedom from your pain, freedom from any suffering. This is my gift to you, from all the energy you've built up over the last 9 days in your meditation, pour that into this golden ball of energy in your heart. Send it through your chest to everyone in this room, blasting away their pain, soaking away any fear. So everyone in this room knows they are cared for, they are loved deeply, purely, not asking anything back, just out of the joy of giving. Giving my energy, my love, my care to everyone in this room until this golden light just soaks everybody, until everybody feels they don't have to live up to anything anymore. They're at peace, they are loved, accepted. They are pure like the trees in the forest without having to be perfect. They are loved. As you allow this love to go through your chest to others, and other people's care to come into you, sharing this golden light of loving kindness. And the more you share it, the stronger it gets. Until with this beautiful love, there's a bliss, there's a peace, a combination of these two incredible qualities. Peace and joy in your heart. As you give more peace and joy to others, reinforcing the loving kindness to all people, all beings in this room, including teddy bear, two teddy bears. And now you send this loving kindness out further, beyond the walls, to all those little ants on the path, the birds who fly in the air, to Bianca in the kitchen, whatever she's up to, Mike and Dania, to all the people who make this retreat possible, and all the beings, the kangaroos which come out at night time to eat the lawn. You can come, kangaroos. To all beings in this great forest, even invisible beings, all the fish in the lakes, we care for you. You are our friends, you are part of this great jhana grove. May all beings in this compound be free from fear. May they have enough to eat, enough joy, freedom. May they know they're all welcome, no matter what species you are. We care for you. We want your happiness and joy. It's one of the great pleasures of living here, to see the little joeys first poking their heads out of the pouch, looking around, jumping up like rubber balls, so bouncy. See them grow. These are our friends. These are our companions. We love you. We care. As you send this beautiful golden energy, soft, healing, reassuring, accepting, throughout this whole compound of jhana grove, you can feel that everybody receiving it, being still, with the beautiful, profound serenity of love. A love which doesn't ask anything, which only wants to give. There's this light in your chest, really strong now, tingling, so we can send this even further, further eastward up the road to the prison farm, where people have done some very cruel things and hurtful things, and are remembering what they did every day of their lives. Give loving kindness to the people who need it the most. Those behind bars, those in the hospitals in the other direction, suffering great pain, sickness, and those worried sick about them. To all the people, also in Bodhinyana Monastery, over in Serpentine and our post office and other places which look after us, the whole city of Perth, where many of your relations live right now, but all beings in this area, may they know that in these moments, some people, they don't even realize that we're here. They never know us. But that doesn't stop us giving our unconditional, powerful, non-selective love. May all the people in Perth and surrounding suburbs, Mandurah, Kwinana, Bunbury, may all people be happy and well, free of fear. They realize they don't need to argue. You're respected. We care for you. May they never feel lonely. May they know subconsciously that in this moment other people are thinking of them, wishing them well, wishing them freedom, wishing them happiness, wishing them health. As this powerful light goes over the whole vicinity, and the more you spread loving kindness, the stronger it gets, not weakness, weaker. Until you spread this loving kindness even further, until it goes across the whole continent of Australia, to those of you from Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, spreading to the whole continent. May all beings who are sick have their sickness lessened, their pain decreased, their fear vanquished, their anxiety diminished. May all beings, and don't underestimate the power of the mind, which has been strengthened by 9 days of meditation, spreading that loving kindness further for those of you who've come from overseas, over to Malaysia and Singapore, up as far as Korea, and even to your brethren in North Korea, over to Canada, United States, down to Brazil, whatever place you've come from, your friends and loved ones are there, your companions, your family. Think of them now, wherever you are. May you know that someone is caring for you right now, thinking of you, wishing you happiness, well-being, freedom from all your fears and worries. And you imagine sending this golden light, this powerful, healing, comforting, freeing ray of love to that country, to those people in their apartments or homes, bathing them, healing them, reassuring them, comforting them, like your mind is stroking theirs from a distance, hugging them, reassuring them. May all the other people in this world, people you don't even know, who are in pain, afraid, fighting wars, arguing with the people they love, and they don't know, why do I argue with my wife, my husband, the kids who are afraid of their parents, the parents who are worried sick about their kids. May this loving kindness soften and ease their hearts, giving them hope, freedom from pain. As you open the door of your heart to all beings, wherever they are, not just human, all beings, I care for you, just like my little kitten. I need you as you need me. May I take away your fear. May you no longer feel you have to hide in the corners of your heart. You can come out and play with me. I care for you. I give you my love unconditionally. As you spread this loving kindness throughout the whole world, healing the people, even the planet. How do you feel? there's one person you've missed out. We leave that to the end. The hardest log to burn is only put on the fire at the very end. And that log is you. Now imagine as if you're standing in front of a mirror looking at yourself. This person you've known all your life. Wherever you go, you take this person with you. The last person you see before you go to sleep at night. The first person you see when you wake up. Me. Have a look at this person. And say, I care for you. This person, I love you. I really wish you happiness, well-being, freedom, laughter, health. With that beautiful loving kindness, put it all over your body and mind, soaking away all guilt and anger. You don't deserve that. May I let go and be free of all the pain of my past. Why? Out of love, care. May I never be anxious for the future, relying on the power of loving kindness to always pull me through. And in this moment, this being which I'm sometimes afraid of, sometimes fault-finding of, no fault-finding now. As I open the door of the heart, my heart to myself, and imagine that part of me which I have kept outside for too long, the part of me I was ashamed of, my mistakes, my faults. I imagine that part of me walking up these stairs into my own heart, coming home, united, at one, peace. This beautiful loving kindness, which can forgive anything, which can heal, which can support, which can find joy. The door of my heart will always be open to me, no matter whatever I do. I'm not perfect, but I'm good enough. Just like the old tree in the forest. The beautiful ones. Bent, crooked, scarred, things hanging off all over the place. Totally imperfect, but so gorgeous. That's who you are. So you can open the door of your heart. Totally. As you allow this loving kindness in, this beautiful golden light, forgiveness, care, love, well-wishing, all over you. And you just stay there, enjoying every moment, allowing yourself to dwell in the bliss of unconditional love. Unconditional. Now to end this meditation, take that golden energy. Imagine it, bringing it in from all those far places you sent it, bringing it in, collecting it again, so it can be used later on. Condensing it into this ball of energy, this golden ball, maybe about 2 inches, 3 inches in diameter, right in the center of your chest, just above your heart. And imagine your heart not like something you've seen in operation. Imagine your heart like a fully opened, white, pure, fragrant lotus flower. This ball of energy just hovering above it, not touching it, but just hovering above this beautiful white lotus. And in order to protect and guard this energy for use at another time, imagine the lotus slowly closing, so gently concealing, safeguarding, protecting this beautiful energy of loving kindness. So it's there for you for the next time. I am now going to give you the final blessing. Just listen and let it soak in. And when it's finished, you may open your eyes. Only when it's finished. To the sublime, we go to even a more sublime, being close to the Buddha.